From the land of Grand Theodore University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 28th day of February, 2023, just 1 week away now from the All-Day Ag Outlook. Today, we'll talk with one of the panelists that will be with us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Wayne Nelson from AgMarket.net. Gary Schnitke will join us. He'll be there as well at the Beef House. I hope you, too, can make it at willag.org to register for that All-Day Ag Outlook. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day, and along the way, we'll hear from the Agriculture Committee's Farm Bill debate, or at least the beginning of those hearings in 1995, to give us some historical perspective as we start the 2023 Farm Bill discussions. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn for the day settled at $6.29.5, down 13 and a quarter cents. The May at 6:30 and a quarter, 13 and a quarter lower. In December, down 6 and a quarter at $5.69 and three quarters. March beans, 27 and three quarters lower, $14.90 and a half the settlement price. The November at $13.47 and a quarter, down 24 and three quarters. Bean meal futures off $11.10. Bean oil down 29 cents. Wheat futures 4.5 lower at 691.5 for the March in the soft red. The hard red down 7.25 at $8.15 and three quarters of a cent. Wayne Nelson at AgMarket.net now joins us to talk about what happened in the marketplace today. Hi, Wayne. Thank you for being with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Todd.
Well, I don't know. It's the fourth day. It's fourth down day. It was supposed to be turnaround Tuesday, and that's not what happened, clearly.
It sure didn't. I'll tell you what, we got the news overnight that basically Corden air cut is Argentine soy yield 2 million metric tons, the corn another 2 million metric tons, going down to 32 on his projection, where the government, where our government's still at 41. And look at some of that, you look at reduced rain in the 11 to 15 day forecast, and overnight we had a little hope, but it looks like we'd be a turnaround Tuesday, and then we got the deliveries, and boy, it sure turned things on the downside on that one for sure.
Well, tell me about the deliveries.
Well, after the deliveries come on in, and they were lots heavier than what they're looking at, as we took it out, we took out the 50-day moving average in the beans at 1509, and we took out the December lows in the corn, and the wheat went down the lowest since September of 21, and that just drove a lot of people to the sidelines. It just, when you take out those chart points, everybody that watches those charts just sort of went away, and it's just sort of a hard thing here right now to say where is support and where isn't support along the way. Now, we did get the ethanol margins back in the green with this decrease in the corn price and holding up that way. So the end user was in there on scale down pricing once we broke below 6:30 in the corn and 14:60 in the May beans. So we did see a little commercial buying, but the funds had quite a bit of length up here, and I'm not sure they're done liquidating yet.
It seemed like Thursday, if you were just watching the market, felt like it hurt. Friday was another hurt day. Yesterday was kind of a okay, fine sort of day, but we'll look forward to Tuesday. And now, all of a sudden, you just feel like you might be really concerned about this marketplace.
Yeah, I think that we've got some concern here looking at a lot of talk out there. But we have to remember there's a couple, three things coming up here, too, that could change a lot of outlooks. Is the grain corridor going to stay open for Russia and the Ukraine? And that could change a lot of things. If we took the cheap Russian wheat out of the equation, that could pump up corn and wheat prices for us. If we the war continues as heavy as it is, we're going to see some lower acreages in the Ukraine, and that could change the balance sheets for the world a little bit if aren't out there as a corn producer. And we've still got some awfully rough weather in South America and down in Argentina especially, and how much more are we going to take out of that? And maybe some late planting on some of the safrinha crops. So there's a few things to look forward to, but really for right now, if you're a chartist, it doesn't look very pretty.
And the only good news I can think of is that sometimes, more often than not, the all-day outlook switches direction of the marketplace. So if it's going down into it, maybe it'll turn around. Speaking of which, it'd be good to have you there next week.
It's going to be a lot of fun, Todd. I'm looking forward to seeing a packed house, the Beef House again. I've got a lot to talk about, a lot more after today and breaking through all this support. And I think guys are going to really be interested to come out and get the views of a lot of the good analysts that are there with WILL and then the Farm Doc team. I mean, what stuff. And there's not a better weatherman out there than the guy we're having to start the day. So, what a thrilling day. And what, for under $50, isn't it, Todd?
Yeah, it's just $30. Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien will kick us off. He's got a brand new, if you've seen him yet this winter, that's not what he's presenting next week. He's got a brand new one. Just like last year, he sort of ends the season by starting with his new look at the weather, and he tested out on us. Last year was really phenomenal, so I'm looking forward to having him there. Again, it's just $30, Wayne, as you mentioned, under $50 to find some place where you can get 21 on stage. I want to say that's the right number for that kind of money. Is pretty phenomenal, including a Beef House meal. It's just great to be able to do that. And WILL's done it with you since 1991. It's a long-term conference, has a lot of history with it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Like I say, looking forward to seeing a lot of old faces, and nothing but a good time to be had. And what a wealth of information for him to take home with him too. Like you say, just a chance, especially after the way the market's trending now, is to see what a lot of these other guys are thinking. And I think it's going to be very, very good for everybody to come on out and, take half a day and enjoy some Beef House rolls and coffee and a good lunch.
Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you next Tuesday at the Beef House.
Looking forward to it, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with agmarket.net. You can join us, willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Register yourself for the All Day Ag Outlook next Tuesday, the 7th day of March, right now. Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, now joins us to talk about his latest penning for the FarmDoc Daily website. This article is posted there this afternoon. It's entitled Fertilizer Prices and Company Profits Going into the Spring of 2023. I suppose, Gary, we should start where you start, which is rather detailing fertilizer across the planet and what prices have been like.
Yeah, so if we're looking at fertilizer prices and we look at Illinois production cost report to get a feel for what they're doing in Illinois, they've actually been coming down in recent time. And we had anhydrous ammonia prices of about $1,400 end of 2022, and now we're looking at $1,235. So that's about a $200 decline, which is something. And we've also seen DAP and potash's prices decline in recent weeks. And DAP is now standing at, according to Illinois Production Cost Report, $830 per ton and $645 per ton for potash. Again, both of those are down, and that's a good thing. Having said that, they're also higher. They're still at very high levels. So we're seeing some moderation, but they're still at very high levels.
Do we have reasons that the fertilizer prices have been dropping?
Yeah, if you look at, in particular, anhydrous ammonia is made with natural gas. Natural gas prices have declined substantially from last year. Part of the reason why natural gas prices have declined is because of a mild heating season. So we didn't use much natural gas as usual in heating. We've also seen natural gas supplies come on. And just as important, natural gas in Europe has sort of stabilized. Western Europe and Germany in particular depend heavily on Russian imports of natural gas. And those have declined substantially as a result of the Ukraine-Russia war. But Germany has dealt with those successfully and have greatly reduced the pain from that. And so we're sort of getting back to new normal, if you will, with still high fertilizer prices, but Europe is successfully dealing, as near as we can tell, with the Ukraine-Russia conflict and natural gas supplies.
Did fertilizer companies make a lot of money in the last year?
So last year was a very good year for fertilizer companies. If we look at returns from like CF Industries, Nutrien, and Mosaic, in the first two cases, CF Industries and Nutrien, 22 returns or net incomes, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization expense was double from 2021 levels. That largely resulted because of a reduction in supply of fertilizers. And those American companies didn't face that supply, but they faced higher prices and had higher incomes as a result.
What do we know about demand for fertilizer, and what does it tell you about the company profits, if anything?
So if you're looking at the demand for fertilizers, if you look at US farmers and Brazilian farmers, it's very inelastic. Large prices don't really change demand that much. So, in situations where we have supply disruptions like natural gas and fertilizers from Russia, those companies with those supplies benefit from that. So it's inelastic. Having said that, as we're moving on, those CF Industries, Nutrien, and Mosaic had very good years last year. That's not going to last indefinitely, and it will come back to normal as supplies come in line.
So they can make a lot of money, but sometimes not nearly so much, I suppose.
Yeah, fertilizer industry is a lot like agriculture in general. There's a boom to bust nature to the industry.
Hey, thanks much.
You're welcome.
And we'll talk with you again next week at the All Day Ag Outlook. I'm really looking forward to having you there at the Beef House.
I'm looking forward to it as well. It'll be nice to see everybody there.
Indeed, it will. That is Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. You too can join us at the Beef House next Tuesday, a week away, for just $30. Register online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. While you're checking out Gary's brand new article, or you can go to the homepage for the radio station at willag.org. Over the weekend, I was archiving some materials and I ran across an agricultural committee hearing from early in 1995. The late Senator Richard Lugar from Indiana was the incoming majority chair, and the Republicans would pursue their Contract with America legislation later that year after flipping both the Senate and the House in the November 1994 elections. It was the first time Republicans held the majority in the House of Representatives for more than 40 years. Senator Lugar convened his incoming Ag Committee and then proceeded for the first 30 minutes to outline what he'd like them to do as it related to the Farm Bill. The bill was eventually titled, in short, the 1996 Freedom to Farm Act and uncoupled farm subsidies from underlying crop acreage. It ended subsidies related to supply management. Lugar started that Ag Committee hearing in early 1995 by wondering aloud what tool and die shops and other small businesses in his home state of Indiana would think if, as he said, quote, national policy was to try to keep in business all people in a particular type of small business, unquote.
Namely, small family farming. Now, there have been many rationales given for this historically, and I don't mean to answer the question today, but we're going to raise it. It has not really been raised substantially, I think, for many years. And in equity to all of my constituents, all the taxpayers in my state, it needs to be raised. Now, even more acute, and let me indicate at least some curiosity, because some of the initial academic papers prepared for this committee indicate that the program crops, namely corn, wheat, cotton, and rice, in some cases have contributed, in the judgment of the draft or the paper, to the consolidation of American agriculture. In other words, if the purpose of the policy is to help the small, and that may not have worked. It may have, in fact, helped the large to gobble the small. If that was a finding, that would lead one to believe that the program, however well motivated, simply did not serve the purpose of maintaining the small family farm or small acreage farm, or however one wishes to define a farm, which under definition is any entity that sells $1,000 worth of product or services in the agricultural economy.
Now, I bring Senators Lugar's comments up today because Congress is once again taking up the Farm Bill. This happens about every 5 years. It sounds a little centrally planned, I know. And back in the first month of 1995, Richard Lugar addressed that subject with his second point to the committee just a few minutes into the meeting.
Would our nation run a serious risk of losing its abundant food supply if commodity programs did not exist? Another basic assumption as to why these special payments are made to agriculture producers. And what impact would elimination of farm programs have on land values? Given current debt-to-asset ratios for agriculture, would this have a substantial impact upon farmers' ability to obtain substantial financing? In some other deregulation schemes in various other countries, the impact on land values has been substantial. And if you were to contemplate changes that led to those sorts of land value change or changes in collateral for credit, we have to examine, as we did before in restructuring the agricultural credit system, what is the impact upon credit in America, ag credit or other credit, in terms of this basic collateral? So that is a perhaps countervailing point. Some would argue keep the thing in place because if you don't do so, you really jerk the rug out of land values, collateral values behind credit, and a lot of other business in America.
Once he'd laid the initial groundwork supporting small family farms and then suggesting it wouldn't be a good idea just to stop subsidies altogether, Richard Lugar, the politician, turned his attention to some things he thought needed addressed.
Finally, let me just skip over to say that we get into specific questions. What impact on page 3 would elimination of the tobacco program have on the price of tobacco products? What impact would this have been on smoking? The assumption being if the price went down, would people smoke more? Should this be our concern? In this committee, are we looking really at tobacco in an entirely market-oriented way? And as we look at the tobacco program, and I do not purport to understand all the manifestations of that, we will examine the numbers of warehouses now filled with tobacco owned by the federal government over the course of several years, some suggesting hanging there, as those leaves are hanging now, as much as 44% of the entire crop of a year, all either owned or in serious jeopardy as collateral by the federal government, $1 billion worth. So we want to take a look, how is that working? How do we ever get out of it? And in the event that we should wish to do so with minimum loss to taxpayers, why should sugar production be protected, imports restricted, if the result is higher sugar prices for American consumers? Question asked around this table before, but nevertheless an interesting one. My own judgment is most consumers have never understood how that program works, why they are paying more, and have not understood why necessarily sugar production has almost the same rationale as the program that we talked about last year for wool and mohair, namely arising from World War II and the thought that fiber might not be available for the uniforms of our troops. I suspect that the same problem may pertain to sugar, but that ought to be examined.
Again, that was the late Senator Richard Lugar from Indiana laying out the Farm Bill debate for the Senate Ag Committee in 1995. The tobacco programs were phased out in the early 2000s. The sugar programs remain in place, although they've changed over the decades since first being introduced during the Great Depression, but still try to ensure a domestic sugar supply in the United States. Over the coming months, we'll talk on air a lot about the current Farm Bill debate. It helps to have some knowledge of past events. We'll do that too. I hope you'll find the discussions of interest. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You mentioned to me that this weather feels a lot like spring to you. Can you tell me why?
Well, we're heading into March now, so we would expect that we're going to see a variety of weather that you normally do as you transition from late winter into early spring, and we're certainly going to see that. A lot of the storminess that's been making a lot of headlines, the snow and the blizzards in Southern California and the stormy weather out west, is ejecting energy and moisture across the middle part of the country here later this week. And we're going to see a widespread rain and thunderstorm event from eastern Oklahoma, eastern Kansas, throughout Missouri, Arkansas, into eastern Texas. There's going to be a lot of severe weather into the south central areas of the United States, with severe thunderstorms and possible tornado activity. But on the northwest edge of this system as it ejects, it's going to produce a fair amount of snow across portions of eastern Iowa, southern Wisconsin, into far northern areas of Illinois. Could be looking at significant snow, as there's a fair amount of cold air on the backside of the system. So coast to coast, it's going to be a very busy weather pattern across the U.S.
That snow comes when? Friday of this week?
Yeah, as we get on into Friday and Saturday, that's where the backside of this low is going to draw in some cold air and bring some late season snows. And that's one thing that I think we're going to see in the month of March. You know, while we're seeing the tug of war between warm and cold as you get into this time of year, there's a lot of cold air residing over the higher latitudes that really isn't going to go anywhere else in the globe except into the continental parts of southern Canada. So the systems that we're going to see in the month of March in the northern areas may see some significant snow with some of these March storms.
By significant, you mean a foot at a time?
Well, I don't know about a foot at a time, but there, you know, there's some parts of the east, northeast parts of the United States that haven't had a lot of snow this winter that may see more snow in March than they have all year.
Is it an unusual spring event at this time of year for you?
No, I don't think so. I mean, what I've been doing this for 30 plus years, so you start to catalog things. And, you know, one thing that I'm seeing this winter and spring, some similarities to the winter spring season of 2010 into 2011, which is showing a lot of the same patterns. And that includes a lot of the stormy and snowy weather that's been out west. So yeah, you tend to see patterns repeat themselves, not every year, but a pattern that happened 10 years ago will show up again. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now.
Hey, thank you much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, just 1 week away from the All Dag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you've not registered, do it right now at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.